It was cold and rainy on the summer morning of August 26, 2015. That predictably unpredictable Michigan weather. I dropped my two daughters off at Skull Island, an ominously named summer camp they were trying out for a few days, and got to Hurley later than usual. Once inside, warm, musty air greeted me, that old hospital smell wafting through the brightly lit corridors of glossy tile. I reached my office on the pediatrics floor and immediately felt behind the door for my white coat. Wearing the coat always made me feel better, stronger, protected. It was my armor. Then I swung a stethoscope around my neck, completing my transformation from civilian to doctor. At my desk, I read the local news online for a few minutes, just a quick scan, and noticed another story about the tap water in Flint. Residents were complaining. Authorities were explaining. This had been going on for so long, more than a year already. It had become a loop of white noise. Turning my attention to the multicolored grid of my online calendar, I got a handle on the day ahead. It was packed, a crush of meetings, 4, 5, 6 of them, for research projects, curriculum changes, faculty recruitment. Somehow, wedged between the meetings, I had to answer emails and read other material, mostly prep for more meetings. On the home front, a barbecue was beginning to materialize for later that night, a spontaneous last-minute gathering. I discovered that my high school friend, Annie Ritchie, was in town for a few days, and we decided to get together with another old friend, Elon Warren, now Batanzo. We had all been friends since our freshman year at Kimball High School in Royal Oak, the inner-ring, working-class Detroit suburb where my family had landed after my dad was hired by General Motors. Annie is an opera singer in New York City now. Elon is an environmental engineer who moved back to the Detroit area after many years in D.C. They were both in my wedding, but not as bridesmaids in matching dresses. I didn't have any of those. Elon and Annie were both serious musicians, so I asked them to perform, and they did. I reached into the pocket of my white coat for a pen and felt the plastic tip of an otoscope, that pointy tool that doctors use to look inside a child's ear. The coat may have been my soft cotton armor, but as far as I can tell, the real reason doctors wear white coats is for the pockets. Otherwise, there'd be no place to store all our pens, pagers, cell phones, reference cards, tongue depressors, pen lights, mints, chapstick, and otoscope tips. My fingers felt a scrap of paper, and I pulled it out. The paper was covered in crayon scribbles. A memento. I remembered where it had come from and smiled. Reva had given it to me. She was a watchful 2-year-old who had been coming to our clinic since she was born at Hurley Medical Center. The week before, Reva's 4-month-old baby sister, Nicola, had been in the Hurley Children's Clinic for a routine checkup. One of my pediatric residents, Allison Schnepp, was seeing Nicola. I was the supervising physician. Nicola's mom, Grace, a young African-American woman with a steady gaze and hair pulled under a loose cap, told us she wanted to stop breastfeeding. I urged her to continue, but she said she'd made up her mind. Breastfeeding took too long and was a hassle. Plus, she had to go back to work. She was a waitress, and there was no place to pump in the restaurant except the restroom that all the customers used. She couldn't afford to do anything that jeopardized her job. As it was, she wasn't getting enough hours to make ends meet. She planned to switch to powdered formula mixed with water, but had some concerns. "Is the water all right?" she asked, looking skeptical. "I heard things." Reva walked toward me with her hand out. Kids love to distract a doctor who is giving total focus to a younger sibling. So I turned my full attention to Reva, and she placed the torn scrap of paper in my open hand. She had a sheepish smile, as if she were handing me a secret message. And we shared a conspiratorial look. "Thank you, Reva," I whispered. "I'm going to keep this right here in my pocket." Then I sat her down on my lap. "The water. I'd been asked about it before." "Don't waste your money on bottled water," I said, nodding at Grace with calm reassurance the way doctors are taught. "They say it is fine to drink." Inches away, Reva watched me carefully. I smiled at her again, gave her an extra squeeze, and then put her down. I patted Nicola's fuzzy little head and touched her fontanelle, or soft spot, out of habit to check its size. It was my chance to explain to Grace that her baby's skull was open because her brain was still growing. This was the time to stimulate her baby by singing, talking, and reading. Then I gave Grace another nod. The tap water is just fine.